As you know, there are four accounts of the Gospels, and we believe that St. Mark, from which we read today, is not only the earliest of the four Gospels, but it is the shortest. It's only 16 chapters long. But St. Mark does something that the other Gospels do not do. He tells stories in a certain way that scholars call the Markan sandwich. By that, there's a story where you'll begin with one scene pertaining to one person. He'll then move to another story and then come back to the first story. So we could put it this way: the story of Jairus and his daughter is like the bread, and the story of the woman with the hemorrhage is like the filling of the Markan sandwich. And so in this passage from Mark chapter 5, we see two people who, in terms of the society in which they lived, could not have been more different, but they come to Jesus in their need. And what I've entitled my homily this morning is The Key to Grace. For what we see in both Jairus and the woman with the flow of blood is a kind of humility. And the humility is the key that allows for the grace of Jesus to enter into their lives. Think with me for a minute about Jairus. Jairus is one of the leaders of the synagogue in Capernaum. Capernaum was the hometown of Jesus after he had to leave Nazareth, and it was kind of like his headquarters in Galilee. Jesus would have spent much time at the Capernaum synagogue, and on previous occasions, he and Jairus must have had various conversations. Now, Jairus is a leader of the synagogue. This means he's a man of financial means. This means he's a man of prominence within the town of Capernaum. And it also means that he's the kind of person to whom people would come with their problems. But now, in light of his daughter's terrible illness, he recognizes he needs to go to someone else with his problem. And the thing that is so inspiring about Jairus is how different he is from the other religious leaders. If you're aware again of the gospel stories, you'll know that usually there is tension between Jesus and the religious establishment. And so one of the things we see with Jairus is the humility to acknowledge his dependence upon Jesus Christ when so many of his peers were trying to kill Jesus. And so here we see a picture of this man Jairus. Now let's turn to the woman who has been hemorrhaging for 12 years. Within Jewish understanding, her life was literally flowing out from her because of the blood. And this made her ritually unclean. If Jairus was at the very center of Jewish society, this woman was an outcast within that society. And as St. Mark tells us, as the years progressed, as she went to one doctor after another, seeking one cure after another, rather than getting better, she got worse. And here's one of the remarkable things that we envision with this woman. We can see her. All around Jesus, there are people touching him, pressing in against him. But she is so persistent in coming close to Jesus that he knows that when she touches the tassel of his garment, that something significant has happened. Remember, he asked the question, "Who touched me?" And the apostles are questioning, "Lord, all sorts of people are touching you." But what he recognizes and what he knows is there is something unique about this woman that sets her apart from all the other people who are coming up and rubbing Jesus. Her touch is genuine. Her touch is sincere. Her touch is one where she says, "I need Jesus." And this is the key to grace in her life. This is the key to grace in Jairus's life. And this is the key to grace in your life and mine. For each one of us, we'll discover, I pray, more and more what these people discovered in our gospel story today. We're called to humility because it is the humble who are able to allow for Jesus to heal our hopelessness. It is the humble who allow Jesus to strengthen us in our weakness. It is the humble who allow Jesus to enlighten us in our darkness. Healed of hopelessness, strengthened in their weakness, and enlightened in their darkness. This is what we see happening with Jairus and this woman. Think about their hopelessness. My daughter is at the point of death. Maybe some of you here have lost a child. Maybe some of you here have experienced a severe illness of a child who then recovered. But what can be more painful for a parent than to know that their child is at the point of death? It's one of the most tragic things we can experience in this life. He is hopeless. And what about the woman? For 12 years, she's had this flow of blood. For 12 years, she's been getting worse and worse and worse. She's hopeless. And yet there's something about them, that they see Jesus and they look to him, and it helps to heal them of their hopelessness. Now, you might think that because I'm a priest, well, probably Father Jonathan never feels hopeless. Nothing could be further from the truth. One of the things that I have to really struggle with in my life is the feeling of hopelessness. And part of that is because of the work I do as a pastor. The stories I hear, the ongoing suffering that I see in the life of people that is spiritual, emotional, and physical. Being confronted with the reality of death all the time. And so I know that in my life, as I've been reflecting on today's text, I need to look to Jesus. Because only Jesus can heal Jonathan Gibson of his hopelessness. How about you? What do you do when you feel hopeless? When you feel that the evidence actually seems to, well, in some ways, convict God of where are you in a world like this? And yet, where is God in a world like this? He's in Jesus who comes amongst us. And so, beloved brothers and sisters, one of the things that we all struggle with in this world is a sense of hopelessness. And the only way to overcome that is to go through it and allow for Jesus to continue to heal our hearts. These two are also strengthened in their weakness. One of the things that impresses me about this gospel is how persistent they are. Jairus repeatedly comes to Jesus and calls out to him. The woman is not detracted by all the people who are in front of her. She perseveres because she's given an interior strength when she sees Jesus and she knows he's the one to whom I have to go. Do you know, it's one thing to try to live the Christian life for a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 5 years. It's another thing to live the Christian life for 50, 60, or 70 years. And to continue to live a life where we will persevere. And this brings me to my second point, that all of us in some ways are spiritually weak. In some ways we think, oh, it's so hard to carry on. Wouldn't it be easier to just give up? So many people do, don't they? They stop following God. But not this woman, not Jairus. Because the Holy Spirit was at work in their life. Because they so desired Jesus, he strengthened them in their weakness to persevere. And he wants to do the same for you. He wants to do the same for me. Healed of hopelessness, strengthened in their weakness, and thirdly, he gives light to their darkness. We see this most especially with Jairus and his daughter. Having healed the woman, word comes from the home of Jairus, your daughter's dead. Why trouble the teacher any longer? And Jesus says, no, Jairus, I'm coming home with you. And when they get to Jairus' home, there are, and this was common within Jewish society, professional mourners. People outside the house who in a sense are being paid to be there to mourn. And Jesus addresses them and says, she's not dead, she's only sleeping. and they laugh at him. And this gets to the heart of the Christian story. For you see, there are so many people who laugh at the gospel. They laugh at the reality and the hope that is ours of the resurrection from the dead. And that's the very essence of these texts. Because what we see with Jairus' daughter is the hope of the resurrection. That for the Christian, death is not the end. Death is sleep. For the Christian, death is the sleep of the night that leads through to the dawn of the new day of resurrection. Maybe some of you here have lost a loved one in this last year. Maybe some of you here are experiencing someone who is dying. But here's the beauty of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That as Jesus spoke to this girl, and he used these words, Talitha kum, that's Aramaic. Why did Jesus speak in Aramaic to this girl? Because it was her language, and it was also his language. At the moment of our death, Jesus will speak to us in the language that we can understand. And do you know what he'll say to us? My daughter, my son, arise. So that's the first way in which Jesus brings light into our darkness, into the darkness of death. And what about the woman with the flow of blood? Well, here's the remarkable truth of the gospel. We believe in the resurrection of the body. We believe that we will, in the resurrection, have a body that is completely healed, that is perfected. I was in conversation with someone about this last week, a nun who teaches what's called St. John Paul II's theology of the body. And we were thinking about, well, in the resurrection, how old will we be? And she said, well, we're not sure, but maybe 33, the age Jesus was. That age where you've kind of come through childhood and early adulthood, and you're kind of moving into the prime of life. Will we be 33? Hard to say. But we will be fully alive. And here's the beautiful thing, too, about the resurrection. There will be something to eat. Isn't that lovely at the end of the text, that as this girl gets up, Jesus says, give her something to eat. So what does this all mean for us? Well, I think it means the following. You see, in a world like this, we often, more often than not, don't see the dead raised to life. It's important to realize that in the Gospels, there are only three times Jesus restores the dead. Lazarus in John 11, the widow of Nain's son in Luke chapter 7, and Jairus' daughter. Most of the people at the time when Jesus lived, they died. There are probably many 12-year-old girls who died that he did not raise from the dead. But this story is told with a particular mark and intention, and it's this. Mark was writing to the church in Rome, and we believe he wrote his gospel around the mid-60s of the first century. If you know anything about the history of Rome at that time, Nero was the emperor, and around the year 66 AD, he burned the city to the ground because he wanted to rebuild Rome to his glory. But this is what he did. He blamed the fire on the Christians. And as part of the punishment, he took Christians and he doused them in oil and put them up onto lampstands and lit them on fire. And he used Christians to be torches to light the Roman sky. How would you feel if you were a Christian in Rome at that time? Perhaps pretty hopeless, pretty weak, and in dark. But St. Mark wanted the Christians to know that, yes, this is hard, but look to Jairus, look to the woman with the flow of blood. Oh, and the other thing about Rome at that time, within a year or two, St. Peter and St. Paul, the leading apostles of the city, would be martyred for their faith. Do you see, the gospel is always interacting with our lives in the real world. And it's wanting to instill within us the perspective that we have in our first reading from the Book of Wisdom. What a remarkable passage this is. Because the passage says that death is not from God. Death is not from God. Listen again to these words. God did not make death. And he does not delight in the death of the living. So where does death come from? Well, we're told death entered the world because of the devil's envy. That's the answer. What is the devil envious of? Well, the devil is envious of the fact that God in Christ assumed the fullness of our humanity. There is nothing the devil finds more despicable than the incarnation. Have you ever thought of this, that before the incarnation, the second person of the Blessed Trinity was pure spirit? But then when Jesus became man, he assumed a body, and he still has that body forever and ever in heaven. The devil hates this. And what the devil hates equally is that you and I are going to share in the resurrection. That you and I are going to be people who, as that writing from Wisdom says, we have been created for incorruption. Isn't that amazing? You and I have been created for incorruption. And then the writing says, and he made us in the image of his own eternity. Look at your hand, feel your arm. Think of who you are. You have been made in the image of God's eternity. However, from our current perspective, we cannot always discern that this is so, because there does seem to be conflicting evidence, namely illness and death, that can lead us to conclude that we have been made for corruption and we have been made for mortality, not incorruption and eternity. However, when day by day we can grow in humble confidence in Jesus, then the key of grace can allow us to grow in believing that there is more to this world than meets our eye. These very bodies are images of God's eternity. In his bones, Jairus knew this. In her blood, the woman with the flow knew this. And they came to Jesus when they were faced by corruption and death. And they discovered in him healing for their hopelessness, strength in their weakness, and light in their darkness. I pray this for you. I pray this for me, that we will allow the key of humility to unlock the grace of Jesus in our lives today.